the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to a special edition of Civitalk. This is Brooke Medina, and I am joined by my co-host, Ray Nothstein. And today we have a special interview with a young college graduate named Sienna Stanfield. So Sienna, thank you for joining us.
Of course, thank you for having me.
So Sienna, one of the reasons that Ray and I wanted to have you on today is because we think that it would be very valuable for our audience to be able to hear from someone that is just graduating, hear from a North Carolina university, and you have a unique perspective that a lot of us who have been out of college for, let's say, just a few years, we don't want to give away our age too much. But a lot of us don't really know what it's like in the college environment unless we have a child or grandchild maybe that's going through it right now. It's really difficult for us to understand what you face as a college student. But first, just give us a little bit of background about yourself. Tell us where you're from and what you studied in school.
Okay, so I'm from Apex, North Carolina, and I went to Elon University. I'm graduating next Friday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I studied strategic communications, and I had minors in psychology and political science.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. I'm sure that was such an interesting college experience because you've got the strategic communications, which I'm partial to as well. You are able to just think about how important messaging is. But then you said psychology, so you're also like analyzing the brain, which I'm sure really speaks into the strategic comms well.
Yes.
And then political science.
Yes.
So do you have political opinions? Is that what you're saying?
Of course I do. Love politics.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful because I actually do know this about Sienna. She does have plenty of political opinions and I tend to agree with most of them. And so it is fun to talk to her and kind of just spar back and forth on these ideas. But I am so glad that we get to introduce you to our audience. But first, I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on politics right now generally? Like, how would you describe your own political leanings?
I'm a very staunch conservative. I'm proud of it. But I think that the Republican Party is very divided in a way that was not so before Trump got elected. And so it can be hard to talk politics even with other Republicans because you don't really know where they stand.
Mm. That's a really good point, right? I mean, there's this dividing line even within the Republican Party. And then there are a lot of conservatives that don't even identify as Republican. They're unaffiliated. For example, I'm an unaffiliated voter and I'm a staunch conservative. But yeah, that's a good point.
Sienna, just from a background for listeners, I think this would help them maybe understand you a little bit more throughout the interview. But who are a few? It doesn't necessarily have to be politicians. It can be writers. It can be public thinkers. But who are a few people that shaped you in giving you your worldview? Because, you know, as a minority, black conservative, you might be viewed as an anomaly on campuses. Conservatives may be an anomaly on campus to begin with, but then someone who identifies or is obviously minority, you know, that shakes things up again, you know, for certain folks. But who are just some people that influenced your life?
Well, I became a conservative when I was 17, so a junior in high school. And it was honestly my friends because we would always have political debates in class. And I was raised a Democrat, so I didn't know like that it was okay to be a Republican and be black. But I knew deep down that a lot of the viewpoints that I had actually lined up with my friends. But I didn't want to admit that because I was afraid of like the backlash of like being a black Republican. But eventually I like came to realize that like, maybe I am. And so I just kind of embraced it. So it was my friends because I became a Republican at such a young age.
Is there anybody you can point to that, you know, just maybe a public figure, maybe a listener might know, you know, whether it's Ronald Reagan or some kind of public figure or author, somebody who maybe shaped some of your thought? Is there anybody out there that you can kind of pinpoint?
Well, today it would be Ally Beth Stuckey. I love her. Her podcast, Relatable,
yeah, she's very popular.
Is amazing, and I listen to it all the time. So she'd be probably one of the main people.
All right.
Yeah, and she is a very articulate voice out there, and she does have some fun videos.
She does.
Those on Facebook.
I love it.
Yeah, she's pretty sassy.
She is. She says she's biblically sassy, though.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, so when Ray was talking about that, you know, you said, or when he was asking you just about what has shaped you, and you said your friends, I think that's interesting because a lot of times when we hear people say that, we think, oh, you know, they're just giving in to peer pressure. But there's something to be said about positive peer pressure. Mm-hmm. But you also have had a lot of experience being on Elon's campus, going into it as a conservative that is like I don't know, has all these intersectionality points as a Black female, right? And there's a lot of peer pressure that I'm sure you inevitably experienced on campus. So share with our audience a little bit of what it was like these past 4 years on campus.
Oh, man. Well, I was really excited to go to college as a Republican because I had no idea that, like, universities were liberal think tanks. I had never heard that, honestly. And so I stepped onto campus super proud and was like, it was during the primary. So I came to college in 2015 and there was like a Black group chat, I guess, that I was a part of. And they were just all talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and Hillary Clinton and all this stuff. And I just didn't agree with her. So I just simply stated, I don't agree with this. And then immediately the next day in the dining hall, like, nobody would talk to me. Like, people were whispering about me, but not talking to me. And then I quickly became known as, like, the Black conservative, like, the one who, like, she who must not be named.
The other. Yes. We're going to otherize her.
Yes. So just really weird because that's not, like, at all what I thought it was going to be like. I thought we were going into a space with other intellectuals where we could have, like, adult conversations, but that clearly did not happen.
So you're saying that diversity of thought was only, I mean, merely a platitude. It really wasn't that they welcomed diversity of thought?
It isn't a thing. Diversity of thought is not a thing. They like diversity of color. That is it.
That's sad in a way because, you know, when I was in school, it was like that to some degree, but I don't think it was as bad as it is today.
It's,
you know,
horrible today.
It's so bad in terms of, you know, everybody goes off into their little group and then, you know, you just see it on social media too. That's where you see that it's worse, right? Where people just gang up and try to retaliate, even try to like make people lose their jobs and things like that. And it's really discouraging to see because I don't mind people that disagree with me. You know, I don't look at them and say they're less of a person or they're not as smart as me. And, you know, occasionally you'll do that, but it's not something like an overriding emotion that comes out of me. It's like, I don't mind disagreeing with people. It doesn't bother me. I mean, I went through school and had a lot of professors that I disagreed with. And you just have to adjust to some degree.
Right.
You know?
It doesn't make them any less intelligent. I have most of my professors do identify as Democrats, I would think or say, and sometimes no. And that doesn't mean that they're not smart. Their degree was not, you know, they got their degree. They earned it. They can back up what they view with evidence. And we can have really great discussions. But that doesn't make them any less of a person in my eyes. And I still look up to them a lot. So I do appreciate the professors that, like, take the time to listen and debate with me, but it's mostly just the students and, like, the culture of the school, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, that word culture, I think you hit on something there that I would like to unpack a little bit more, and it's something called the culture of contempt, and I believe that's really at the root of why we have such division right now, is rather than having this appreciation for different thoughts while still holding firmly to our own and saying, look, there is a truth, you can know it, doesn't mean that you're less of a person because you disagree with me, but I do believe that there is a right way versus a wrong way. We don't look at that. The society at large doesn't typically look at others that they disagree with that way anymore. Instead, it's holding them in contempt, which is kind of speaks to what you were talking about when you walked into the cafeteria and began to just get whispered about and not talked to. It was almost as if you were getting held, you know, in this different sort of cell where other people just kind of merely looked at you and wouldn't really engage with you as a fellow person. So how did you, that seems like that set a tone for you a little bit going into 2016, which I'm sure really reached a fever pitch. So what was it like the day after President Trump got elected on your campus?
It was dead. Like, no one wanted to go to class. And I thought that was, like, really dumb, not to be offensive, but you still have to get up and live your life. And you can't just accept defeat like that. Like, I was a competitive athlete for 10 to 12 years. And if I didn't get first place, I didn't just not go up to the podium and accept second place. Like, you have to get up and live your life. And a lot of the teachers, like, wanted to go to the diversity center and just be and cancel their classes and stuff. And I'm like, what is that setting for the rest of us on resilience, you know? And my professor, I had an 8 a.m. the very next morning. My professor knew that I was a Republican, and she was like, well, I'm sure you're having a great day because Trump won. And I was like, well, I didn't even vote for Trump, but, like, thanks for asking. Like, relax. So I don't know. It was just really weird, like, how maybe some people were Republicans and Trump won and they didn't like that. That doesn't mean that they're having a wonderful day. And the past 8 years, Democrats had won and they got their gloating moment and Republicans had to get up and go to work. So I just was like, let's just function like a normal society. But it just seemed like we couldn't do that, which was really weird.
Yeah, it's weird to me, Sienna, and, you know, you're being a little younger, you may have a different perspective, but, you know, as you get older, you keep seeing, you know, I was born during the Carter presidency, so I've lived through a lot of different presidents, and they don't really impact your life that much, which is kind of funny. Like, you know, it becomes this live and die situation for so many people. But, you know, I survived during the Obama years. I survived certainly during the Clinton years. And those were really good economic times. And to see people just sort of, you know, become so overly emotional about something that really, at the end of the day, you know, it's not something you really have a whole lot of control over. And so taking ownership in just those small areas of your life that you can control is much more effective than, you know, worrying about who the president is going to be. That's important. I'm not saying to diminish that, that it's not important who our president is, but to have your life just crumble around you and to check out for a day, a week, a month. Some people are still checked out because Trump's president. But I mean, you know, I think that's something that's important for, you know, someone young like you to articulate too, because I think a lot of younger people aren't doing that anymore.
Right. And what you said, like that a president doesn't really have that big of an effect on you. We have checks and balances, and we have two other branches of government and local governments. So maybe you didn't get your way nationally, but you could have gotten your way locally. And a lot of people that were like super upset that I talked to you either didn't vote or they like voted for Harambe, like the dead gorilla thing. Right. Dumb. So I'm like, okay, so why are you crying now? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and I think, though, the mentality, the prevailing mentality is that the government is here to solve our problems. And that seems, at least that's my perception. So I'm an older millennial and you're in Gen Z. And so there is a, you're kind
of, you know, there's a line.
There is a line. I mean, so I think, though, that with the younger generations, we've grown up seeing the government continue to grow in power, mm-hmm. and the bureaucracy continues to grow. And so I guess I'm not that surprised that so many people think that the presidential, like everything hinges on the presidential election, as if that president is the dictator or right. something and decides all these laws. But like you pointed out, there's this, these checks and balances that exist. But without a proper civics education, I don't think a lot of people understand that. No. So like when you were growing up, you grew up in Apex. Do you feel like you had a pretty good education in civics at your school? Did you go to a public school, private school?
I did. I went to Cary High School. I'm actually from Cary, but I live in Apex now. So I went to Cary High School. And when I took civics, I think my teacher did a really good job of having it be nonpartisan. I can't speak for people who are in public school right now. I think it's probably more partisan. And then I took AP Gov as a senior, and that was the first time I'd ever learned something in a conservative aspect, like where if politics were spoken, it was going to be conservative and not Democrat. But I think that I had a really good civics education, and I've always just liked history and politics, so I took it upon myself to educate myself on it because I like wanted to vote forever, and so I just wanted to know everything about it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. So that I'm so glad to hear that you felt like you had a good civics education. Ray and I have discussed this multiple times, how important it is. But why do you think so many younger people are starting to soften to the idea of socialism? Why is Bernie appealing and AOC? Like, what do they like about that, do you think?
Word free. They think free. Everything is free and they don't have to pay taxes and they maybe don't have a job. And so they don't get to see the Medicare, Medicaid, all those deductions from their paycheck. And they think that free college is a thing when you're actually paying for someone else to go to college instead of saving that money for you. And it's just, they hear the word free and they just think that's it. They don't see what goes behind the free. Nothing mm-hmm. is free. And I think that's why, because, and the politicians don't do a good job of explaining like free, but you're going to actually have to pay for it. They just say that word and it sticks.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
I have a question, Sienna.
Sure.
And I think this is for the listeners that maybe, you know, they're parents of a soon to be future college student, or maybe it's someone listening that's going to college themselves. But, you know, my wife works at Campbell in the administration, and I hear all kinds of just stories about brokenness at college. And this doesn't just have to be political, but what advice would you give to a student for the first time who's moving away to college? And two, if they're conservative or if they're Christian, what advice can you give them, having gone through 4 years of school, just how to, I think, flourish in a way where they don't have to have angst or be concerned about what they may have to deal with in the college environment? What kind of advice would you give that person out there who's just maybe a little bit unsure about college? They hear all these stories in the news, and you know, what words would you give them?
That's a really good loaded question. So I'm just going to say that you're always going to have a little bit of angst in the back of your mind. But if you're a Christian, you know, like you're a child of God, people's opinions do not matter of you. And to stay true to your morals, because friends come and go, but you're always going to have to live up to what and who you voted for, what you said, who you said it to, who you said it about. And if you stand up for your morals and you just don't care what other people think about you, people are going to see that confidence and they're going to be inspired by that too. I lost a lot of friends in college. Like, people would just randomly stop talking to me. People would try to assault me and like mess up stuff on my computer. But the whole while, I still remained a Republican. I became a Christian in college and stayed true to my beliefs as a Christian. And later, people who disagree with me would even say, like, wow, I can't believe that you actually like stayed strong in your beliefs, even when you were the only one to do it. Like, I can't believe you said that in class and you were the only one to say it. But sometimes you have to be the only one, and that'll inspire other people later on in life to say it. They just may not be ready, or they may be scared, but someone has to do it.
That's a great line. Sometimes you have to be the only one. I think that's a good message that a lot of people need to hear, because there's a lack of bravery and courage in society. And some of that can be for good reason. I mean, we've seen where people have spoken out and they've lost their income or they've lost a job because of their held beliefs. Certainly Christians and around the world, Christians are now the most persecuted faith. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, there's a point in society where I think people just need to be braver and have a greater courage, because it's so important and so essential to be able to speak your mind and to have that courage and belief that you can be a person that, you know, will inspire others.
Right. And, oh, I'm sorry. And at a point, I had locked my Twitter account because I didn't want employers to, like, see things that I was tweeting. But I thought about that, because, like, as a coming out of college, like, you're getting your first job, it's already hard. Why make it harder on yourself? But I said, like, if they don't want me because I'm a Christian or because I'm a conservative, then I maybe don't want them, or maybe that's not the job for me.
Yeah,
so also
think
about that. It's going to be hard if you speak out for your beliefs, but I feel like God is always on your side. He's going to, like, use that for good. So don't let that hinder. It may be hard. You may lose your income, and that's so difficult. I've never been in that position before, but don't let that always silence you. You have to pick and choose your battles, I guess.
Yeah, great advice.
Yes, it is. Yes, out of the mouth of babes. That's wisdom right there, though. Really, that is very wise. So I want to go back to when you said that you grew up in a progressive home or liberal. So what were their thoughts when you started voicing opinions that were different than what you had always grown up to believe?
Well, my mom was not happy. I live with my mom, and I left the TV on Fox News by accident and turned it off, but didn't turn it off so that it shut down and would come back on, like, the guide. It came back on Fox News, and my mom was like, "I knew you were a Republican." And I'm like, "I'm sorry, like, I just have this view." And so
Sienna's coming out.
Yes, it's a coming out story. So I'm the only Republican in my family, but I have a small family, so I mean, that's okay. But we just don't, I try not to talk politics a lot, because it's, you pick and choose your battles, right? And you know, you want to live in peace. But yeah, we discuss it sometimes, but we just really agree to disagree.
I think that's the smartest way when you're living together, and having some of those difficult conversations are inevitable sometimes, but yeah, there's nothing wrong with avoiding them sometimes so that you can just have some good peace.
Yes.
So what is something that you would like, let's say, because some of our audience, again, like I had said before, is older, and so they're maybe far removed from their college experience. So what would you want them to take away from this that would help them better understand you as someone that is now a young professional? You're just starting out in your career. What do you want them to understand that maybe you don't think that they always get quite as readily?
That we're not all socialist Bernie Sanders loving wannabes. Like, some of us really love the Republican Party, and we don't think everything is free. And just because people with the loudest voices always get through faster, I believe. And so that's why a lot of conservative millennials are not heard, or a lot of people, like, don't like millennials, because they think that we just want everything to be free and we just, like, love Beto O'Rourke and, like, all that stuff. But, like, that's
so you don't have Beto mania?
Oh, heck no. Okay. I do not like him at all. But yeah, so we, like, a lot of us, when we get out into the working world too, I think we'll change our opinions, because we'll see those deductions on our checks, paychecks, and be like, oh, so not free. Like, you know what I mean? So I think it's going to take some, like, real world experience, and also just, like, a wanting to be self-educated. I don't think a lot of millennials want to do that. Like, a lot of people on my campus just say, I voted for this person because my mom and dad did that. And so not all of us are like that, though. So give us a chance. Talk to us. And if you, like, hear something different, kind of, like, give us a chance to speak our own minds, you know?
That's a good point about just the deductions, Sienna, because I always wondered, do young people even think about that? All the money that they're giving to Social Security, this program that they probably will never receive one day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're paying, especially even my age, even as a kind of later mid to late Gen X, we're paid all this money into Social Security, and there's a very good chance we won't see a nickel of that. And so I always hope young people get inspired and start talking about the national debt. I mean, we're $22 trillion in debt. That is really a tax on them. They don't understand that at this moment, but they're going to be paying for that for the rest of their lives, and future generations are going to be paying for that. People who aren't even born yet. So, I mean, it's a great example of taxation without representation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, How do you kind of make that case today about federal spending and the debt? Because you talked about so many young people think everything is free. And, you know, even we have a debate here in North Carolina about Medicaid expansion. You hear the word free a lot. Mm-hmm. And so how do you kind of make that case to young people, especially a lot of them are coming out of a college, you know, and it's pretty significant debt. So someone like Sanders is appealing. I mean, if I was $100,000 in debt, I would take a look at people like Sanders who are talking about debt relief and things of that nature. So how do you kind of make that case? What do you think is a good way to make that case to young people, talk to them about the national debt and the way that government is spending their money in ways that they may not even realize?
Well, I'm no financialist, but I try to give them case-by-case scenarios. So let's just take the case of free college. So I want 4 children, and I don't want to pay for Sally's college. I want my daughter to have all of my money, my first and my best, to go to college. I don't want to, like, split my paycheck between someone I don't even know and my daughter, who has worked hard and who I've poured into for 18 years of her life. And so I just ask people, would you want to have to tell your daughter or son that they can't go to the school that they really want to go to because all this money over the years was taken out of your bank account? And some people are like, oh, really? And I'm like, no way. Like, you didn't think about that?
It's depressing, Sienna.
Right? But some people say that I just don't care about community and all of that stuff. But I'm like, not everyone needs college, number one. Number two, there's plenty of ways to go to college. Like, maybe if I could do it again, I would have done community college first. Like, there's millions of ways to get higher education. So, I mean, if that's how you want to spend your money, fine. But I don't think the government should tell me how to do that, especially when people have multiple births, you know, like a lot of kids.
Yeah, and it's a great point because a lot of people don't realize when they're taking out all these loans, and I'm not criticizing folks that take out loans because, you know, a lot of people are in that situation and they want to go to college or, you know, it's the only option to them, but they don't realize the whole student federal loan mess is making the cost of college higher because it's inflating the actual cost. Because, you know, if you're taking out all these loans, you kind of, the colleges can inflate the price because, you know, the loans are readily available to just about anybody. And so the cost just keeps going up and up because it's not a real market mechanism that's setting the cost. It's the cost of just people piling up loans and stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, I would hope some people would think about that too, but you made an excellent point. So that was a great answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's smart, isn't she, right? She just knows all this.
Very,
stuff
very
I'm
smart.
Like.
I don't think I was this smart coming out of college. I was probably a little more arrogant and, you know, not quite as well spoken. But,
right, yeah. Well, it's clear you've thought through these things, and it really is such a breath of fresh air because, again, a lot of the older generation, I think, likes to generalize and think that all millennials or all Gen Zers are entitled and have this sort of mentality that is consistent with an AOC rather than, you know, a Reaganite sort of conservative. So that is so encouraging. I wanted to hop back to you mentioned Republican and then conservative. Mm-hmm. And something here at Civitas, we're a nonpartisan organization, so we're not affiliated with a political party, but we loudly and proudly champion conservative ideals. And so do you have any thoughts on ways in which the Republican Party can become more conservative? Because they're not the same thing. Some Republicans are just, you know, promoting big government too, just for their own projects. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some room for growth in both parties. But do you have any thoughts on the difference between Republican and conservative or some ways to improve the Republican Party?
Interesting. I really hadn't thought much about the difference between Republicans and conservatives. I mean, I realize the party itself is divided and that some people just may be more conservative leaning. But I think it has to do with, like, the way that politics are structured. So, like, some conservatives may go in staunch conservatives but think they have to dial back a little bit just to get elected. And I think if more people didn't think that, like, if they just went in, stayed true to themselves, stayed true to their values, and even if they didn't get elected, okay, like, that's fine, but keep
pushing.
They've
the conversation,
yes,
at least.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that would help, and it would set a precedent for other people who are looking to go into it, because I just don't think you should ever change who you are or what you believe in just for popularity, and I think that's a lot of what politics is, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's a huge temptation to do that, and mm-hmm. you're right, you hit the nail on the head. It's just the desire for either popularity or power, and I understand there's a strategy involved. Mm-hmm. You're in strategic comms. You mm-hmm. understand this. There's a way in which you message things, but you can still stay true to your values while mm-hmm. still understanding, okay, I need to call it this instead of this so that I can reach this this person doesn't understand this word in this context. It's called translation. Mm-hmm. Now, that's different than deception for sure. And so I think that there needs to be a clear distinction because unfortunately, a lot of the reason people are disenchanted with politics is there's deception mm-hmm. rather than a strategic messaging of one's real values. Mm-hmm. It's more just let's hoodwink people so that they'll vote for us mm-hmm. and then we'll actually carry out and execute our real plan all along.
Right.
But before we close out the show, I wanted to take a few moments to talk to you about education, because I know you have a lot of strong feelings on education policy. So my first question is, if you were running for office, what would one of your top education issues be that you would campaign on?
I do not like Common Core. Thankfully, I was a senior in high school and graduated before that was implemented, but I have a lot of friends who are in high school and went through high school afterward, and it just doesn't make sense at all. And I had a chance to shadow a fourth grade class, and they were doing Common Core math curriculum, and instead of doing the numbers like 100 plus 210, like adding the zeros on the right, they would do math to the left, and they would draw cubes and sticks and dots and take 45 minutes to do a math problem. And I'm like, you're going into fifth grade. You don't need to count on your hands anymore. I just think it slows it down, because the teacher was saying like, they need to understand the process. And I'm like, no, they just need to understand how to add a number.
Do
like,
it. Yeah. Do it.
And they were clearly struggling and going into fifth grade and couldn't like add three digit numbers. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. So yeah, get rid of Common Core. Don't like it.
What ways can we improve education? Because that's one of the big crises. And we talked a little bit about civic education, but just give us a broad couple ways that we could improve education in this country, because I think it's a giant problem. I mean, I think some of the challenges might be with social media too. People are spending more time on screens and they're not reading books. I know you can read on Kindle, but I don't know if there's a lot of evidence young people are reading as much as they used to. There's a lot of distractions, and I'm not blaming them. And I think a lot of times people blame young people today for, you know, whether they might exhibit something dumb, but if they were never taught, that's not their fault, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, what's some good ways to really improve education, and especially in the lower school levels?
I believe that we should pay our teachers more than we do, because would you want to spend 8 to 10 hours or 7 hours a day every day teaching children and getting paid very minimally? I think that just kind of shapes how you teach. Like, some people really love teaching. They're not in it for the salary, but not every student is fortunate enough to have some of those teachers. Some have teachers who hate their job, mm-hmm. hate their salary, don't care about how the students learn. And so I think teacher salary is one way to fix it. And also not lumping everybody into the same classroom. So I think having more of an individualized plan for everyone, not like an IEP, but just like having, what I said is that we should test children in kindergarten to see how they learn, and then giving them a teacher that suits their learning style, rather right. than just putting like 30 kids in a class where some people get it automatically and some people don't.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I like that individual learning style.
Thank you.
Idea. I think just as someone who homeschooled her children for many years, it was just, it was a trial and error process of trying to figure out how each student or each child best learned. Mm-hmm. But I found out that once we were able to peg that down, it was invaluable to them actually being able to feel empowered to succeed in school, because they actually were able to grasp a concept. Whereas before, earlier on in my homeschooling time with my kids, even the temptation was just to teach them how I had learned in school, which mm-hmm. was a very traditional way in which sometimes maybe younger girls flourish a little bit more than boys do, just because of the setup, mm-hmm. and it's less interactive, mm-hmm. and things like that. And so it just can make it challenging. I have two boys and two girls, and so I learned a lot through that. And so I really appreciate that point. And then when it comes to teacher pay, I think this is something that is a conversation here in North Carolina that we continue to have. The average teacher pay in North Carolina is actually above the average pay of just all North Carolinians. So it's about $53,000 a year, starting teachers at $35,000. And so something that we've been...
Without the supplement.
Without the supplement. Yeah, there is a supplement. But something that is really worthwhile, I think, for helping teachers is increasing like performance pay, mm-hmm. so that if you are a really good teacher, you actually have the ability to move beyond what this pay chart says that you're allowed to make. So
right.
you might be making the exact same amount as a subpar teacher who doesn't really care. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really, it can be deflating, mm-hmm. to realize that you're not going to earn any more than someone else, even though you maybe spent 10 hours additional that week working on things.
Right.
And so I think that that's really an important part of this teacher pay conversation that we need to include. But we are about out of time. Sienna, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was a great interview. I had a lot of fun, Brooke. And she's got some great insights, and we're probably all going to be you know, don't forget about us, because when you get big, you know,
yeah.
we're going to be calling you for jobs and calling you for advice. So
yeah, don't forget who gave you your start in radio. Okay?
I'm going to mark it down today in my journal that we helped launch Sienna's career. And so, you know, I'm one of those people, the old school is, we scratch your back, you got to scratch our back. So. Don't forget that.
And so also, though, you are on the job hunt. So if there are people, I know you're getting ready to start your internship, but you're also open to other job options. So if you want to get in touch with Sienna, feel free to email us at radio@nccivitas.org, and we will help you get in touch with
Yeah, it'll be a wise decision to hire, I think.
No socialism in this household. I will work.
Have a good day, everyone.